I've been to a lot of CrossFit competitions, and I always love scouting out, seeing what people are eating, what they're drinking. And there's a few ones that actually stick out in my mind as just kind of like entertaining things. One, I remember this girl, she was sitting there between events, just kind of hanging out. She was eating celery sticks between events. And I was like, man, you realize that has like no nutritional value at all for what you're doing right now. That's just not going to provide you with any energy whatsoever. That's like pretty much net negative calories. What else? I've seen many people drink protein shakes, just like a whey isolate, just like straight protein after they're done working out, like no carbs at all. And I was just like, one another thing that just kind of drives me nuts personally. Oh yeah, but my personal favorite was this guy, and he was, mind you, this is right after he got done with the event. Like literally, he's still like breathing hard and super sweaty. He like sits down, he's kind of like curled up in a ball like after he's done. Then he like sits up from like making a sweat angel on the gym floor, and he grabs a plate. He literally puts a dry chicken breast that was like grilled onto it. He's sitting there with like a steak knife and a fork eating a grilled chicken breast right after an event. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm getting like nauseous just like watching this guy try to eat this right after an event. And I couldn't imagine just trying to like choke down a chicken breast after you're just went and thrown out in a workout like that. So it's like, I've seen so many people get it wrong. So like, let's please just try to get this just a little bit more right. Let me help you rethink the way that you do nutrition for your next CrossFit competition. Hey, it's Ben Wise, and this is The Fitness Movement. The Fitness Movement is brought to you by Zor Fitness. Zor Fitness is my company and my platform to deliver incredible training-related content to people just like you. I don't just podcast. I write in-depth fitness articles. I break down common movements in the sport of fitness. I program workout plans, and I offer one-on-one coaching for competitive and recreational athletes. And the best part is most of what I have on ZorFitness.com is totally free. Check out these resources by going to ZorFitness.com. That's Z-O-A-R Fitness.com. Hope to see you there. And welcome back to my rant on CrossFit competition nutrition. So essentially, this podcast is on peri competition nutrition. So peri competition nutrition, what does that mean? So peri, the prefix peri means around. So in other words, everything that you eat around a competition. So pre, during, post, and I'm actually going to add prior, which is basically like before pre. So like a couple days before, like what's this going to look like? What's this going to look like before, several days before, like the day of, in between workouts, during workouts potentially, and then post or after workouts, what's it going to look like? And then I'm defining nutrition as anything that you put into your mouth. So food, water, supplements, anything that you're taking in before, during, after this competition, what is it going to entail? So the outline of this podcast, the first thing I'm going to do is compare performance and competing versus training and health. So performance versus training, competing versus health, like how we're understanding that those two things are different. And obviously they're going to have some correlates and similarities, but at the same time, they're also going to have some stark differences in a competitive setting. After that, I'm going to go into macronutrient basics. You've probably just heard that referred to as macros. We'll talk about macros a bit and like what's the purpose, how much of them should be getting. But then specifically, I'm going to dive into prior nutrition, pre-workout nutrition, intra-workout nutrition, and then post-workout nutrition, those four categories. So prior, pre, intra, post. So way before, right before, during, after. What's that going to look like? So let's dive into it. Okay, so let's talk about performance and health to start off. I think most people think that performance and health are kind of almost pitted against each other in some ways, where they certainly don't go hand in hand. But actually, the vast majority of the time in training, especially, performance and health are going to be tied very closely with one another. So if someone improves their metabolic panel, so their triglycerides, their glucose, their cholesterol numbers, kind of using their blood work as a marker of health, then likely they're also going to see I actually changed and improved my fitness level during that time as well. And that was actually correlating with this. It doesn't always work that way. And especially as people get into a higher level of fitness where they're maybe overtraining and doing things like that, like that's where those things are going to start to deviate. But for the most part, most people, performance and health are going to be going hand in hand. Competition, however, is not one of those times. During competition, the goal is to win. It does not matter if you game the system. It doesn't matter if your back's hurting in a certain way. Like none of that stuff really matters. And certainly we can get into the argument of, you know what, you're not really an athlete full time or this or that. But like for the most part, we have to understand the goal of competing is to win. That's the whole point. That's fine if you disagree with me, but I say that's the whole point. You are there to have your best performance, and your best performance would be to win. So we'll go at it that way. But realize that if you were there and you were competing, you were trying to do the very best that you can. And it doesn't matter how you go about that. It doesn't matter the longevity of your joints or sustainability of what you're doing or your ability to listen to your body. None of that stuff is nearly as relevant in performance competition settings. It doesn't matter if we game workouts. It doesn't matter if we eat real food. It doesn't matter all these things. So we have to just understand that we are talking about a competitive setting here where it is win at all costs. It's fine if you can create shortcuts without cheating. It's fine if we're going to prioritize macronutrients and just not really care about micronutrients, phytochemicals, pre or probiotics, all that kind of stuff, because we're prioritizing the fueling demands. So when we start into this conversation about nutrition related to competition, we have to understand that we're coming from a performance mindset. And that if we perform and compete better and at a higher level, even if it means that we have to undo some of the damage that we did during competition and the days or weeks after this, that is perfectly fine. We just have to realize that that's what we're going into it with. And realize that as a listener, that is the lens that I'm going to be looking at this topic through. If you are competing and we're talking about a CrossFit competition and trying to maximize your nutrition around that, we're talking about how, what can I do to give me the biggest edge so that I can win that competition or perform the very best that I can. Talking about macros, we think about what the word macro means. It's like big picture items. It's what's basically what's fueling your body in a gross sense versus like micronutrients would be vitamins and minerals where they're going to be, yes, helping kind of support a lot of the functions in the cell and throughout your body as you're taking on the macronutrients. But the macros are actually what's going to be providing really the biggest demand for the work is going to be provided by the macronutrients. So there's three of them. It's carbs, protein, and fat. And that's what's really going to be helping you. A side note, we could probably throw alcohol in there as well, but provided that you're not like drunk or tipsy when you're actually working out, then we're going to be looking at these three. So again, carbs, protein, fat. So let's start with carbs. Carbs, they are your preferred fuel source for intense activity. So essentially every workout or, you know, 95% of the workouts that you do in CrossFit are going to be highly carbohydrate based while you're doing them. The only scenarios where that would not be the case are extremely long workouts. Think like more than 3 hours potentially where you're going to start to use more fat for fuel. And that's, I don't know if that's ever been the case where there's been more than like a 3 hour workout in a CrossFit competition that I know of anyway. The other scenario would be if you're completely depleted from carbohydrates, then your body will go to a secondary fuel source where it's either going to be using protein or fat for fuel. But that's not the source that your body wants to use during high intensity exercise. Your body wants to use carbs. I could kind of throw in a side note about creatine here. Creatine and especially shorter bursts, you can think about like really sprinty, short bursts of powerful bursts would be phosphocreatine demands are a little bit higher. So if you do supplement with that, even if you don't, like a lot of foods have creatine, but if you do supplement that, that potentially can be a fuel source as well in those short bouts. Or if you are kind of doing an alactic aerobic effort where it's an easier effort and then it's a really powerful hard effort. So next, protein. Protein is, you'll hear it referred to a lot as like the quote, building blocks of muscle, which that's accurate. I mean, it's literally the muscle tissue is made of protein. So we need protein. We need it to rebuild damaged tissues, especially after we do really high intensity work. But it's not the preferred fuel source for high intensity work. It's just a chance for you to build up after you've already done that work. And then lastly, fat. Fat is going to be the fuel source most of the time, actually, but not during that in high intensity. So lower intensity work, which again is most of the time during rest, during sleep, all those times, you're going to be using fat primarily as your fuel source. And then it's also going to help with synthesis of hormones, the absorption of nutrients, a bunch of other functions. But if we're sacrificing one of these short term, I'd rather see someone sacrifice a lot of the fat intake to up their carbohydrate and protein intake and also to have that get absorbed quicker. So one of the principles that we'll look at here is that fat takes a much longer time to break down. Fat can't get broken down until it's in your gut. Whereas carbohydrates, for example, they can get broken down in your mouth, one, mechanically through you actually chewing, but two, chemically, with your saliva, and then it'll hit your stomach. It'll get broken down by the acid there. It'll get mechanically churned again. It gets broken down much quicker and digested much faster than fat, which has to go through an emulsification process to be absorbed, and it's a lot slower process. So one of the reasons why you'll hear that I suggest not having much fat in a post-workout meal is because fat will slow your absorption rate and prevent temporarily carbohydrates and protein from getting to your muscles and into the cells faster. So that is the goal, is for a speed of delivery standpoint. We're just going to have a little bit less fat in the diet to make sure we're not slowing that too much. All right, so let's actually get into the timeline here. So we're going to be going prior, pre, intra, and post workouts. So we're going to start with prior nutrition. I'm going to be calling prior 1 to 3 days prior to your competition is what we're talking about here. The goal here is for you to not change much. The less you change, the more consistent that you can be to what you always do. It's actually going to be really helpful for you. We are animals of routine. People eat on average about the same 100 foods most of the time. So the goal for you is not to start to experiment with a new diet or a supplement or something like that. The goal is for you to just kind of hold and stay the course and make sure that you're not deviating from what you normally do so that you can feel normal or good on race day, right? That's the idea, like quote race day, like your competition day. The quote that I have here is, quote, nothing new on race day. And that's something that gets said all the time in different circles. But the goal is for you to create consistency, because if you do something new, there's a lot bigger chance that something's going to go wrong. If you decide, oh, you know what, I'm going to start taking a pre-workout supplement the day of my competition, don't do that. That's a terrible idea. The less you change, the less likely that there's something that can interfere with your best performance. You're not going to get new degrees of fitness if you're taking a new supplement or eating a little bit of, you know, a new food or whatever. Like, just stick with what you already have. So eat the same foods you normally do, and you're going to eat it in about the same amounts. You might eat a little bit more to assist you yourself in fueling, but for the most part, you're going to eat a relatively stable diet the whole time. So a key component of this is that your weight and your body composition, so your overall body size and your fat to lean muscle mass ratio, you're done with that at this point. You are not going to try to manipulate that anymore. So whether you're a bigger dude or a bigger gal, and now you're trying to cut down to your competition weight, at this point, you're not going to try to continue to lose weight right before the competition. You're just going to eat a maintenance diet where you're kind of coming up out of that caloric deficit so that you can actually take on all the fuel that you need and to be ready and fueled up for that competition. Same thing if you're someone who's trying to put on muscle mass and you're just eating a ton all the time. You might actually want to just ease off of that just a hair, where you're not having a lot of GI distress or bloating or things like that going into your competition either. So you're trying to avoid anything that's going to inhibit you from your best performance. It's really the goal here. As part of that as well, we might up the carb intake just slightly. We're not carb loading. You're not going to eat 10 bowls of pasta or anything crazy like that, but you might up it slightly if you're paying attention to that. However, that's going to coincide with a decrease in activity, because you're going to be peaking for this competition. So you do less before you actually go into your competition so that your fitness peaks. But while you're doing that, as your activity level goes down, your demand to use carbohydrates will go down. And that means that the amount that's stored in your muscle will go up. And that's the goal, is for your fuel sources to be topped off as you're going into this competition. And then also make sure that you're taking in enough water as you're doing this. That activity level is going to be coming down, and that's fine and that's appropriate. You can even probably maintain your water intake, and you're going to become more hydrated as you do that. Don't overhydrate where now you're depleting your electrolytes and like dealing with hypertremia. We just want to take in enough where we're hydrated. We're not thirsty anymore. Your urine's not super dark. Just some metrics like that that you can kind of keep an eye on and make sure that you're staying fairly hydrated going into the competition. So another thing I really recommend at least a few days prior is, number one, creating a shopping list. So going and actually listing out all the foods, all the drinks, all the supplements that you might need for that day. And how I actually recommend doing this is not just based on like a list of like just items. You might do that initially, but what you really need is a schedule where you map out all the events for the weekend or day or however long your competition is, and figuring out what things am I going to eat at what times, or at least getting a really good idea of how much am I actually going to be consuming throughout my day, and then map that out as closely as possible so that you think, oh yeah, after this event, I have 1 or 2 hours. After this event, I go right to the next one. I might need something a little bit less here that I can grab a snack here, or I might have a more time so I can have a bigger meal at this time. all those sort of things that you can start to map out and just get an idea of what foods that you actually like, foods that you know that you can tolerate well on competition day, all that kind of stuff. In addition to that, don't just go and get those specific items, but also get a few extra things and alternative options that you're like, you know what, if I not really feeling a banana on race day, maybe I'll get some grapes instead. So you just can, things that you can sub out where you're like, okay, if I don't feel like eating this full meal, I'll have these bars ready just in case. Things like that where you can start to map out what you actually need for your quote race day. So speaking of nothing new on race day and this idea, I remember about a decade ago when I was doing triathlons, or maybe it wasn't even quite that long, 8 or 10 years ago, I was getting ready for my one race and I knew to not change anything on race day, but unfortunately, I gave a carbonated drink that I was drinking that I tolerated very well to my father, who was also doing the race with me, like, you know, 20 or 30 minutes before the race. And he came up to me after the race and was like, I was burping the entire swim. Like, that's not what you want to do. You don't want to change up anything. So whether it's you or somebody else, make sure you're sticking to the things that you normally eat and drink. So don't take anybody else's supplements. Don't change anything. Just stick with what you always do. So now we'll say it is the morning of. So you just woke up. We're going to consider this now to be pre-workout. So this could be anywhere from like maybe 3 to 5 hours before you're actually working out, doing your first event. You are going to be then getting up and fueling for the first time. So this was going to be your last regular quote meal where you're going to be eating all the things that you normally would in the same amounts. You're not going to be eating like snacks and things like that. It's just going to be more of a full regular meal. Here, rather than giving you endless options of things that you could eat, I'm just going to suggest a few things that you probably want to avoid in this case. Three things that you want to avoid. Number one, heavy fatty foods. So something like bacon or sausage that's going to take a much longer time to digest in your gut. Something that would typically on a good regular day kind of stick with you and keep you satiated, keep you full for a really long time. You want to avoid some of those foods. Especially if you know that you're going to be nervous and you're probably going to have some indigestion, you really don't want to be having something really fatty like that. So two, we will be avoiding foods that are high in fiber. And the reason that we're going to be avoiding them is because they have the most potential for GI distress. So you don't want to be running in event one and have to go to the bathroom. So that's what we're trying to avoid. So just having foods that aren't super high in fiber, not eating like a ton of oats, maybe something like that as your first meal of the day is going to be super helpful for you to just kind of avoid one of those pitfalls. This is a good example of when performance doesn't necessarily line up with health. Like you want to perform the best you can, and that's when you're actually going to be pulling out some of those healthy, high-fiber foods. Number three, and lastly, I would say that you do not want to consume any more or any less caffeine than you normally do. So this goes for coffee, it goes for teas, it goes for pre-workout drinks, anything like that. So for example, you have an event and you always take a pre-workout supplement before you normally work out, then by all means, continue to do that so that you feel normal on that day. Whereas if you never take a pre-workout, don't go and take a pre-workout. If you drink coffee like you normally do in the same amount that you normally do with the same creamer, with the same lack of creamer that you always do. Like you want to be consistent. You should be seeing a trend now. Be consistent with what you're doing. Nothing new. So I'm also going to consider pre-workout to not just be that last meal of 3 to 5 hours before. This could also be I'm going to call it an optional snack 30 to 60 minutes before. This snack, you may have it, you may not have it. Depends when your last quote regular meal was and when your event is. If you're feeling still a little bit full, if you're a little bit hungry, however you're feeling, however you're going to tolerate that meal is perfectly fine if you have this or don't have this. I would say this is more of a personal preference one and just kind of knowing yourself and what you need. The first thing we need to think about for this snack 30 to 60 minutes beforehand is we want it to be low fat and we want it to be high carb. I actually say low protein here as well. The reason for that is so that you can absorb it quickly and that it's not going to be sitting in your gut when you go out to actually perform. And you might skip this meal. Not everyone needs to have it. And you might skip it if, number one, you are someone who is nervous. So if you're super nervous, you're not going to digest it well because you're already in that kind of fight or flight state. You're already probably going to have some indigestion. You're probably going to be burping. You have stomach jitters, like all that kind of stuff. Butterflies. That's fine. Just skip that meal. You don't need that. It's called a snack. You don't need that. Two, if you're someone who's pre-diabetic, diabetic, or hypoglycemic. So all this is kind of fancy ways of saying you have issues dealing with sugar. So it could be that your blood sugar is going to be high. It could be that it's low, or it could be a combination where it's going up and down and kind of waving. If you're having issues, or you know that you might have an issue with sugar during your event or going into your event, then by all means, don't cause a spike in your blood sugar before you go to work out. That's not really worth it. For everyone else, if you are kind of a normal responder and you're eating kind of a normal high carb, low fat food that's not just like straight sugar, but it's pretty easily digestible carbs, that yes, you're going to have a normal peak in blood sugar, but then it's going to even out and it's not going to dip super low. You'll just kind of be in a normal range by the time you get to your workout, and you're not going to be hypoglycemic going into that workout. But this is something that I would practice before you actually get into race day. And lastly, if you're someone who has a, let's just call it a sensitive stomach, or that you just kind of get nauseous or you feel kind of pukey before you want to go work out just from like nerves and other things, this goes back to that being nervous thing. Like, you don't have to have this meal, probably better off just not eating this particular snack. Okay, let's get into intra-workout nutrition. So intra being during. So this is, you're actually in the middle of an event. I'm going to classify it as either short events or long events. And yes, I'm creating a very distinct divide here between the two. Short events, I'm going to call that anything under 45 minutes. So you're going to see why I call anything under 45 minutes a short event. But that's one end of the spectrum. And then long events is anything longer than 45 minutes. I haven't really seen any events in a CrossFit competition much longer than the marathon row, the games the other year, which was, you know, 3+ hours for most athletes. So I'm not seeing many events longer than any of the sanctionals or anything, any local comps for that matter. So I think 45 minutes to 3 hours, somewhere in that range, right, where it's the long end of the spectrum. That's those long events. During the short events, so the vast majority of any CrossFit style workout that you're going to be doing, 95 to 98% of your workouts are in this range, in that window of 0 to 45 minutes. You are going to consume nothing during your event. So during your actual event, while you're out there doing your CrossFit movements, doing all that stuff, you're not going to be eating or drinking anything. And you don't need it. It's not going to aid you in any way to be consuming things. And there's only potential liabilities there from you doing that. So you don't want to consume anything. You're not depleting yourself far enough where that's going to be beneficial in any way. However, on long events, so events longer than 45 minutes, and by the way, this is either going to be like 0 or 1 events in your competition. There's not going to be more than one of these. And it's almost always cyclical events. So it's almost always a run, a bike, a row. I haven't seen a swim that long or anything like that. So it's usually an erg or potentially walking or running or rucking. So you're either going to get 0 or 1 of those events. And when you do that, there is a potential for substrate to be a limiter for you. So in other words, fuel. So you run out of carbs, you bonk. So bonking is a term that is used in the endurance community a lot to basically describe someone who is dealing with fueling issues, where it's not an aerobic capacity limiter, it's not an aerobic endurance limiter, it's a fueling issue where you are not able to actually get the carbs or the fat mobilized that you need to be able to continue to do that work at the same rate. And you slow down, you kind of hit a wall and you feel super sluggish and tired, where your gut isn't digesting your food properly, whatever the error is or whatever the issue is, it's kind of being described as like a bonk in that case. And usually happens like maybe 2/3 of the way into like a workout like this. So in the marathon row, they felt pretty good up until maybe the 30,000 meter mark or something. And like 2/3 of the way through that workout, then it kind of hits them. And then they're really starting to actually run out of carbohydrates that are stored locally or in the liver. So during an event like this, it's super important that you are getting the fuel back into your body and replacing the liquids that you lost as well. So you're going to be sweating a lot. You're going to be burning a ton of calories in a really long event like this. You need to replace during the event. I actually recommend having a plan beforehand, but mapping out, okay, every 20 minutes, I'm going to consume some amount of liquid. Maybe it's 4 ounces of liquid or something, or like 3 sips or something like that, where you can start to manage how much you're actually taking in and making sure that at regular intervals during this workout, it's not at such a high pace that you can't stop and take a drink. You're going to be drinking or potentially eating during this event. So primarily, I do recommend drinking, and the goal is here to just replace all the fluids that you're going to be losing, especially if you're in a hot, humid environment. You're going to be losing potentially liters per hour, and that means many liters that you could potentially losing over a period of time like that if you're not getting that fuel back in and that liquid back in. You want to optimize the way that you do this so that you can take on as much liquid and as many calories as possible without creating GI distress or starting to hurt your pace. So you're going to be taking in water and sugar. So that's carbs, right? Sugar's carbs when you break it down. So water and sugar, you're going to be taking in electrolytes. So things like sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium, bicarbonate, chloride, those would all be examples of electrolytes. So that could be like better form of Gatorade or something like that, where Gatorade doesn't have many electrolytes, but it has the sugar, it has sodium in it at least, and it has water content where that's all going to be helping. Realize that there's also correct ratios here where some electrolytes, if you overdo it, that's going to actually create more GI issues. So for example, for me personally, I can't handle sodium bicarbonate, which is baking soda, but it's put in a lot of electrolyte supplements because it's sodium and carbonate, those two electrolytes that you need. And for me, that causes GI distress. Like, well, frankly, I get diarrhea. So I know that from endurance work. I've had several supplements that have had sodium bicarbonate in it, baking soda, and I've gotten really bad gut issues from that. And I did that in training, so I knew that that was going to be an issue for me. I didn't do it on race day. So it's important that you can handle all these different electrolytes in the forms that they come, but also that we get them in the right amounts and ratios so that we're replenishing in the right ways. And then secondarily, you're going to be eating foods. And these are going to be foods that, number one, it's easy to chew because it's really hard to chew and swallow while you're also moving at any sort of a decent pace. Things that are carb-based. So carb-based, breaking down into sugar quickly. So it could be things like those goo gel packets, honey, molasses, Clif bars, potentially if it's a nice long event, part of a banana, grapes, whatever you're going to tolerate well. It could be, you know, gummy bears for all I care. It's just sugar. You're taking it in. Any of those things would be perfectly fine. And how much and what type of food and drink you can tolerate can be determined by the activity being completed and your body orientation as you're doing that activity. So for example, running is not just that you're upright, but you're also bouncing up and down. So if you're bouncing up and down, people when they're running can handle much less in terms of their gut compared to if they're biking. Biking, there's very little up and down movement. You're not bounding. Your gut isn't getting tossed and turned all over the place. So it's a much easier way to digest your food. If you're swimming, it's going to be a completely different ball game because you're going to have to come up out of the water and completely change your orientation of your body just to be able to get in food. That's a completely different scenario. If we're thinking about rowing, your hands are being occupied most of the time. So it might be really nice if you can at least have one handle on the rower handle and be able to either, you know, have like some sort of a straw mechanism worked out where you can throw it into your mouth and suck down some Gatorade or something like that. Then if we're doing something like mixed modal work where we're switching between swimming, biking, and running, just say it's like a triathlon, then you have to really be careful and pay attention to your transitions. Not just because like in the sense of that, like you could like lose time during your transitions, but the fact that you have to change the way that you're distributing fuel to your limbs as you change each discipline. So as you transition from biking to running, those muscles are harnessed in different ways. And there's a lot more potential for cramping. There's a lot more potential for issues in that scenario, moving from one movement to another. So be slow and ease into those transitions and also do that in terms of your nutrition choices as well. All right, let's talk about post-workout. So this is after your event is over. And I don't care how long this event actually is. It could be a 5-minute event, a 15-minute event, or a 3-hour event. It doesn't really matter. You're going to be taking in about the same fuel either way. First thing is the goal is to take this in as soon as you're kind of calmed down from your workout, at least enough where you can start to drink something. So I recommend most people taking in these calories and this fuel through a liquid form. And primarily it's going to be carbs and protein in approximately like 3-to-1 ratio. So more carbs, 3 times as many carbs as protein. And this window of time, this 10 to 30 minutes, or it could be a little longer than that, but it's called the anabolic window. You might hear it like referred to as the window of gains. But why does it make sense? Well, it's blood flow. Like your heart is pumping around, all your blood vessels are dilated to the tissues that have been actively being used during that workout. So it makes sense that, well, if we're taking waste out, it's really easy to continue to pump fuel in. So besides the carbs and protein, it can also potentially be helpful for you to include creatine and electrolytes as well, based on where you're at. And that could just be something as simple as adding a little bit of salt to your shake. So that was 10 to 30 minutes after. I'd also recommend eating 1 to 2 hours after. And if you have another event, that's kind of scenario number one, then I would have another kind of pre-workout meal. So kind of going back to that first stage. But if you're done for the day, this is where I recommend now having a full normal meal with a mix of macronutrients and now including fat in that mix as well. So including carbs, protein, and fat. So how do things change if this is a multi-day competition? Number one, your fueling becomes way more important than it was before. Every single day that you add onto a competition, it's more and more important that you're getting all the fuel that you need. Something like the Tour de France, where it's a 21-stage event and they're riding multiple hours every single day, barring like a few rest days. They have to be really on top of what they're eating and the amounts that they're eating, and everything has to be perfectly measured and calculated to know exactly their fueling demands and to make sure that they are ready to go from a fuel substrate perspective. Two is making sure that you actually get regular meals between events. Make sure that you are actually getting the food that you normally do day to day, and that you're not just getting like these shallow versions of food where it's just like a bunch of carbs every day. If you're basically eating sugar every single day for most of your day, you can tolerate that for maybe a day or two, and then your body really starts to reject a lot of that. So you have to eat a little bit closer to what you normally do. And an easy way to do that is just start to add in a little bit more fats between events, especially if you have a longer break between events. So an easily digestible fat would be something like peanut butter would be a good example. And then lastly, I would say eat real food more often as your body can tolerate it. And that's a case by case thing, but it's just good to know that you should be eating more real food, which should look more like a regular training day for you. I'm going to leave you with some of the common mistakes I see. Number one is that people just supplement too much, especially with protein. Protein, they take in so much protein, and it's like, you don't need that much protein. I think people think supplementation as a whole is often just protein, whereas like, okay, it could be an electrolyte supplement. It could be an omega-3, could be any number of other things out there. But supplementation as a whole, especially protein, I'm just seeing a little bit too much of it. If you can get something like maybe a Fuel for Fire or even like baby food, I know athletes who eat baby food, that's easily digestible, probably pretty low fiber, but at the same time provides real food and carbs, that's ideal. The second mistake is it's basically the same exact thing where people are just getting in too much protein and too little carbs. That athlete that I talked about at the beginning where he sat down and literally ate a dry, nasty grilled chicken breast right after an event that makes me sick. Don't do that. Like, you need more carbs than you need protein. That's what's fueling you during these workouts. Three, changing it up on game day. So like I said, probably a half dozen times or a dozen times by now, nothing new on race day. And then four, not shifting state. And this is one that's probably a little bit more complicated. So basically, an athlete is not going back into a parasympathetic state or rest and digest state after the workout. They're staying in a sympathetic fight or flight state, and they're not transitioning gears to get back into that rest and digest, that recovery mode. So they're really never recovering from those workouts, and they're just constantly staying up all the time. The best thing I can do here without getting into like a 30-minute discussion is referring you to one of my articles that I wrote. It was called How Nervous System State Impacts Nutrition. So I recommend going and reading that. And I link to that in the show notes if you go to zorfitness.com/podcast/007, this episode number, you can get that article and all the show notes from this show as well. And I hope all of you found this talk about nutrition helpful as you go into your next CrossFit competition. Thanks for listening. And as always, stay the course. If you enjoy the show, do me a huge favor and give the fitness movement a positive review. And as a way to say thanks, I will send you the 12-week workout plan of your choice from my website. Simply email me at ben@zorfitness.com. Thanks in advance. Hey, it's Ben again, and one of my main responsibilities besides producing content like the fitness movement is being a coach. I work one-on-one with athletes to create an individualized plan to help them reach their goals. So let's say you hire me. The first thing I'll do is learn about you. We'll jump on a video call and chat. And this is something we do every training cycle. It becomes a very regular part of our schedule, which allows us to stay on the same page with things. I'll also take you through an in-depth assessment to really get a very accurate, detailed look at where you're at and what your specific limitations are. Then it's my job to create a plan to help you achieve your goals. In other words, taking you from where you're at to where you want to be. And here's the thing is that I will be 100% the person program every workout for you. And when you send me film and tag me in your videos, I'll be the one providing adjustments for your technique and cues to help you correct your movement errors. So you pay me month by month and there's zero commitment. You have nothing to risk and all the gains to make. Sign up today by going to zorfitness.com/coaching or email me at ben@zorfitness.com.